Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about legends, anomalies, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts, and my name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined today by my faithful friend.
Hello, that's me, Mark Matzke.
So I have a funny story to tell you, actually, before we get into this. We also didn't choose a topic for this first episode yet. I mean, we have our topics, but I don't know which thing
we're seat of our dice. Pants.
Yeah. Woo. We should probably finish up the lizard people reptilian theory thing. So, anyway, I got a message, Facebook message yesterday from, the fine people over at 97.1 Wadsworth Community Radio that there was a package for me at their studio that had come.
A package.
And I was like, that's weird. So so I swung in on my way into the office yesterday, and that's apparently where the Linda Godfrey, I had submitted like a pull quote for her upcoming book. They sent me a copy, and for some reason they sent it to Monsteropolis Studios.
Aha.
At Wadsworth Community yes. Radio, which I thought was kind of funny.
The studio annex that we keep there.
Yeah, and Tom and Tina had opened the package, so I had a
make sure it wasn't a bomb.
Yeah, they were just double checking, I guess. So, speaking of Wadsworth Community Radio, if you're in the area, we are on Wadsworth Community Radio, 97.1 FM. Showtime is
Sunday at 8 o'clock.
Sunday at 8 o'clock.
Eight or nine.
Did they show it? Did her play it on Saturday too? I thought they played it.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay,
maybe they do.
I know Sasquatch used to play like twice over the weekend, but I'm not entirely sure. So anyway, if you're in the area, 97.1 community, Wadsworth Community Radio. Small Town Monsters is actually based in Wadsworth, and this is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters, a film production company making movies about legends, anomalies, and monsters around the United States. So, yeah, let's talk about...
should we mention the...
Oh, we have letters, too.
...event?
Yeah, I'm really blowing through this.
it's been a few... you have this great insight today.
Yeah, I actually did research, although most of it started about an hour before you got here. I was really frantically pouring through. But, yeah, Black Forge Coffee House in Pittsburgh. Someone told me it's like the North Hills of Pittsburgh or something like that. I think it's the North Hills neighborhood is what someone said. So Mark and I are doing a live recording of a Monsteropolis episode at the Black Forge Coffee House, July 19th at 6 o'clock PM. It will be Mark and myself. Jason Udis will also be with us. And we'll be talking, tickets $5 to $10, I believe is what the going rate is for a Monsteropolis live recording. Yeah,
plus coffee.
Yeah. And free autographs. We'll give you a free autograph. the show is going to be about the Chestnut Ridge. But we'll probably get a little broad, you know, with some other subjects thrown in, because I don't know how long we're even supposed to be talking. I thought I saw like 6 to 8 or 6 to 9 or something like that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, we'll figure it out.
6 to 8 with a 45-minute break in between.
We did get mail, so maybe we'll dive into this real quick. The monsteropolismail@gmail.com. If you want to have us read your letter on the show, you can send your email to monsteropolismail@gmail.com. First one comes from Alex Young. Hello, Monsteropolis crew. My name is Alex. I am a musician from Oklahoma, and growing up, I always heard rumors about a lake near my hometown of Newcastle called Lake Thunderbird. The rumors are about a supposed lake monster nicknamed the Oklahoma Octopus. I think that it would be an interesting podcast episode, or maybe a segment on an up-and-coming Lake Monsters episode. That sounds awesome. I want to know more about that.
I have never heard of that.
I never have either. But I had never heard about the Crosswick monster, which we're going to get into a little later. So I think, honestly, this is the thing. When you really start diving into, like, any kind of... sorry for sniffing into the phone. By the way, for listeners, I probably sounded horrendous on last week's episode. I had a cold. Today, it seems to be sort of a combination cold/allergy attack. So if I sound like garbage this entire episode, it's because I'm... battling whatever is happening to me. But yeah, in doing like any kind of monster or folklore research, you come across all these little like stories that no one talks about or that have been completely forgotten. And that it is kind of like the crux of small town monsters right there. Like if I could really do that, I would. If I thought that would sustain itself, I would do that. Like just cover like unknown, you know, this story about the Crosswick monster and stuff like that. The Oklahoma octopus that no one knows about. So yeah, let's, there's more emails, I think. Let me double check. Well, we talked about Zechariah Burton. He sent an email called Invisible UFOs Fill the Sky. I guess we didn't talk about that one. There was one that was sent to us all the way back in March. That we somehow missed, and I'm having a hard time finding it right now, but there was one that we had missed on the show, and I felt bad about it. So if you are the one that sent us the email back in March, I wonder if it was this one. Hey, I was suggested your podcast from Reddit, and I've been catching up on all your episodes. I moved to Cleveland 3 years ago, so I appreciate hearing about the Midwest cryptid stories. Where can I find some of the movies, docs you've worked on? My wife and I were going to take a trip, and we were looking at maybe Sedona to do some UFO hunting. Any places you guys suggest? Thanks for the great show, Vinny. Did we ever read that on the show?
No.
Okay. Vinny, I've never been to Sedona, although I will be there in 2 weeks. So if you've been there by now, which is a possibility, maybe you can suggest something for us. All the movies are on Amazon, Vimeo On Demand, and VidiSpace. Some of them are on iTunes, Google Play, PlayStation Store. You can buy DVDs through smalltownmonsters.com. Today we're going to talk about more about the reptilians. I believe pretty much the last episode was just a brief overview of the entire idea behind the reptilians. This is the episode I've done the least research for of everything we're about to talk about. So I should disclaimer if this is mostly me asking Mark questions, that is the reason.
Interview.
Yeah, that is the reason. And it's funny because like when this is a subject that I actually at one time knew a decent amount about because I used to listen to like so many of those strange and unusual, you know, podcasts covering these subjects. And I know I listened to interviews with David Icke before. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong? Or he's kind of the one that we talked about this, I think, but like, is he the one that invented this entire conspiracy theory?
That's a great question because I think he definitely popularized it. But the more that you go looking for information, it seems to me that there's been reptilians mixed in with UFO encounters and you know, just separate from Icke, it's been an issue. So it's sort of he's propelled it into another area of, you know, just saturation. But I think as far as reports about reptilian, let's say UFOnauts, mm-hmm. or you know, occupants of flying craft or just coming up from below the Earth, those stories have been around independent of David Icke as well. They're just lesser known because they're so strange, I think.
And so for listeners who might not have listened to the first episode or who feel like we didn't touch upon it enough, the entire reptilian conspiracy theory seems to be that there are a secret group or a cabal of reptilian overlords that are basically secretly running the planet. There are two schools of thought on where they originated and how they became in a position of power. One is that they arrived from the Draco Galaxy, or the Draco Constellation, Draco. And the other is that they've been here all along. Both of them seem to subscribe to the idea that they live in underground cities. And the two sort of predominant areas that I found, I don't know if you know more, but the two predominant areas where they would be living underground are Mount Shasta. And where is Shasta at? Is it Arizona?
Northern California.
Northern California. And then Southern California in the city of Los Angeles. And we're going to get into where those ideas about the lost city under Los Angeles might have originated in the next episode, which I'm really excited to get into because it's one of the few times where I have actually done some research and found something kind of cool that I can blow some minds with. But yeah, the idea is that there's a secret race of reptilians that rule over the world, and they are able to sort of shapeshift and disguise themselves among us. Think of the movie. What is the Rowdy Piper movie? Is that they?
They're Alive or something like that.
I don't think it's They're Alive. Oh my God, someone's gonna kill us for this. I gotta cut this out. But yeah, basically they are a shadow people or shadow race that run the world. And they are disguised and hiding among us. Now, I've also discovered that some of them know they're reptilians and others do not know they're reptilians. So I don't know. And the other thing is that
they live.
You were closer. Close. You were much closer than me. I just said they. The idea is that some of them don't actually know that they're human. Now, you might wonder how a reptilian can disguise itself. I guess, like, from what I was reading, they have these scales that can sort of play tricks on people's minds and trick you into thinking you're seeing something. That there are reptilians that are said to be like 14 feet tall and stuff like that living among us, which might explain the Flatwoods Monster.
They can just change their vibrational rate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's it. They change their vibrational rate. Kind of like what when the Flash can make himself invisible by vibrating. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like that. That's sort of the brief overview. Obviously it's much larger than that. They're tied into all the sort of popular cults or conspiracy theories, everything from like Freemasons to shadow government and all that stuff is kind of overseen by these lizard people living among us.
Yeah. And that's the fascinating thing about like Icke's literature and so forth is that you see this elaborate flow chart of all, just about, you know, think of any conspiratorial group mm-hmm. you can.
Yeah, they're tied into everything.
Yeah, and the lizard, the reptilian race is sort of at the very top, right, behind everything. And that always, for some reason, I am really interested in those type of theories that try to explain everything with one thing. Mm-hmm. And there's an understandable drive, I think, to try to do that.
We've had that talk even with like spirituality and religion and how something like the Bray Road Beast can try to be sum that up as well. It's demonic. Mm-hmm. But I'm sort of in the same boat. Like I think it's not so easy to any phenomena, it's not so easy to just explain it away with like one answer, because that's just not how this works for mm-hmm. some reason. It's like the idea that if you're a Christian, every sort of bizarre paranormal subject is demonic, or every cryptid has to be a demon or some sort of being the crawled out of hell. Like it doesn't, and I'm not laughing at that idea, but the fact is you can't, for whatever reason, it's like we talked about Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. You cannot just explain away any one paranormal phenomenon with one answer. I just don't think it's really possible, because you're dealing with witnesses a lot of the time. Obviously, now I'm starting to go in a completely different, but you're dealing with witnesses who might be misidentifying something, who could be seeing something other than, you know, what they think they're seeing and things like that. So, anyway, the idea, by the way, just to get back to the origins real quick, I think that the thinking is that they actually, the idea is that they, the lizard people were birthed here on Earth. They lived here. They originated from here. They evolved to the state that they were and then left and then came back, I guess, is kind of the idea. That's one of the ideas.
That's one of, yeah.
That's
one
per top10s.com, which says reptilians came from, some believe that they evolved here on Earth, left Earth after they mastered intergalactic travel and then returned millions of years later. Others believe their home planet is in the Draco constellations. Did you ever see the old TV show V?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you want to talk about like the ties to the reptilian stuff?
Oh, sure. I mean, that the main thrust behind that series was very much the concealed reptilian alien invaders were infiltrating everything. And I remember being, you know, at the same time attracted to that show and very interested in it, in the themes of it, but kind of really bothered by the, there's this one scene in particular where there's like a person gets their face torn off and it's the reptilian face underneath. And I was just at the right age where that was extremely disturbing to me. And I sort of stopped watching it after that because it bugged me so much.
It used to get replayed all the time. And then they remade it, I think, a few years ago. But it used to get replayed all the time on TV. And I grew up in hotel rooms because my family traveled so much. And it would be on TV. And we never watched much of it. But I can remember my sister's pausing on that show just to scare me.
Oh,
because I was, I was so spooked by, the idea behind it. But yeah, that popped into my mind this morning while I was doing my non-existent research on this. I was like, maybe I should just sit down and watch V. Yeah.
I would love to go back and watch it now and hopefully make it through the scary parts in order to see how closely it parallels a lot of this, what we're talking about today.
And the X-Files plays a little bit with the reptilian thing, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not just talking about the Lizard Man episode, which is one of my favorite episodes of the more recent. What season was that, 10 or 11?
Which one was that?
I think forget, 10. But it's one of my favorite. Yeah, it's one of my favorite episodes of that season.
Second to last, I think.
We should talk about that in the Escape War Swamp episode. Mm-hmm. Let's get into your research that you've actually done.
Well, I am drawing a lot on the work of Brad Steiger, and he sort of just compiled, it's sort of a compilation of reptilian stories, and they all together sort of, I don't know, hit targets around the things that we're talking about, but it gives you the sense of the background and sort of the history, both related to conspiracy and not. I mean, you have some anecdotes in here, like stuff like this. In June 2005, a 13-year-old boy was out hunting with his grandfather near Big Springs, Texas. While he was following a flock of quail, he became separated from his grandfather. The teenager, carrying his shotgun and a bag of shells, injured his leg when he scraped it on a rock. He paused to tend to the wound. After arriving at a pond, he began to apply water to the scratch. He heard a splashing sound. He looked over and saw a man opposite to him on the shore, leaning over to drink from the pond. It took him only a few seconds to realize this is no ordinary man. This man had scales and a lizard's head. The teenager was petrified. He stood there frozen, watching the strange creature, when all of a sudden, the lizard man jerked its head up and turned to look at him. It eyed the witness for what seemed like hours, then jumped in the water and began swimming towards the boy. The boy managed to shoot 3 shells at the lizard creature, then ran from the area as fast as he could. So alongside of sort of the,
conspiratorial.
Right.
Yeah.
The whole UFO and underground bases and Mount Shasta, those type of connections. You also have these isolated
I've got some of those myself.
Yeah.
I want to save those for the Loveland Frog Lizard Man episode, which is probably going to end up being like an hour long because I've got a lot I want to hit in that episode. But yeah, the idea is that there's actually a history of this kind of thing, reptilian, you know, the creatures that have been seen that goes back quite a ways. Like the idea to me is almost that Ike and some of the other conspiracy theorists sort of incorporated what was already an existent phenomenon into their global elite conspiracy thing.
Yeah.
How tied into ufology is the reptilian?
I think it's pretty deeply tied in because the reptilians also appear in sort of the lineup of people, you know, when people have had abduction experiences and so forth, one of many so-called races that they can be exposed to are reptilian, like super 7 to 8 foot tall. They're generally thought of as, you know, if you go across a spectrum of benevolent to evil, they're always seen as those who are on the evil end of the spectrum. And that's just a feature, I think, along with your Nordic races and the Greys and so forth. It seems like if somebody is abducted or has a UFO experience with a reptilian, it's extremely bad. You know, there's nothing good or we come in peace about it.
Can you describe like physical, because I don't even know if we've touched on this. We've just sort of, but like physically, what do they look like? Obviously we said they're scaly.
Yeah, I think, you know, most of the time you're talking about something between 6 to 8 feet tall has...
No, no, there's very big ones. I can tell you, they're the ones that are secretly over
they're
everything.
They're like the boss.
Yeah, that's the boss lizard person.
Yeah, because they will have a humanoid shape, and sometimes it seems like there's tails, sometimes not. Mm. But their face is... kind of lizard-like, sort of snake-like, and usually a long neck, but not always. The eyes are typically, you know, yellow with the reptilian sort of look to them as well. So, you know, it's anthropomorphic to a certain degree, but the facial features, I think, are typically the most lizard-like that you would run into.
I want to run into one of these things.
I'm sure.
Is there any talk about how many times Spider-Man has defeated them in sort of the...
on ancient petroglyphs, yeah. I think you may find some of that stuff.
That is actually something. So there is a Native American component to this that I've found. And again, it plays into this lost city. And the Hopi Indians especially seem to have some lore or legends or whatever you want to call it that plays into the conspiratorial side of the lizard people as far as like their origins go. Cause that's part of the idea that they come from like lost cities underground is rooted in Hopi Indian culture. And I know that from reading some of what I did and some of what I'm going to touch upon in the Lost City episode. But did you do any research into that kind of thing?
Yeah, this goes right along those same lines. Okay. It says, and now it doesn't name names, which is a little bit
fishy.
Yeah, it says archaeological digs, again, this is Steiger, archaeological digs in the United States have discovered skeletal remains of primitive men and women more than 7 feet tall, hominids with horns, giants with double rows of teeth, prehistoric people with sharply slanting foreheads and fanged jaws, pygmy cultures far smaller in height than any known groups that exist today. As more and more such anomalous discoveries are unearthed, it begins to seem as though the Americas in particular might have served as some vast living laboratory in genetic engineering. And so it goes on to talk about Robert Morningsky's story of Bekti survival of the Roswell crash. So this all, you can see how it, just all one thing morphs into another.
What is Bekti? I'm not familiar. Is that there was a survivor on board the Roswell craft? Because maybe I have heard.
Okay, well, this is...
Oh, good. Okay. He's got it. For listeners, Mark has a very large smile, a very big smile right now.
Robert Morning Sky says that his grandfather was one of six young Native Americans who witnessed the now famous Roswell flying saucer crash in 1947. When the young men reached the site, they found one being who was still alive. Gently, they took the star visitor back to their camp and nursed him back to health. They kept him carefully hidden, for they were well aware that the military men they saw searching the crash area were anxious to capture the survivor. Morning Sky's grandfather said that they called the stranger from the stars Star Elder out of respect. As time passed, the alien revealed his name in their language. He was called Bekti, and through many nights of talk around the campfire, he revealed the history of humankind and the planet Earth. In the late 1960s, when Morning Sky started college, he found himself doubting some of the things Bekti had told them. He enrolled in religious studies, an independent study program that would allow him the opportunity to research ancient records, thinking this way he could prove or disprove the many stories of Star Elder. Morning Sky submitted a thesis entitled Terra, A Hidden History of Planet Earth, that summed up his 3 years of research. Within days, his professor had labeled the thesis a work of blasphemy and outrage.
Oh my.
Having had no success in the academic field, Robert Morning Sky decided to try his luck with a number of UFO organizations and researchers. The general response was to label the work, quote, the stuff of myth and legend of Native Americans, not suitable to the serious study of scientific phenomena, end quote. Such rejection made him angry. For nearly 30 years, he refused to pick up a book on UFOs or the paranormal. Circumstances changed right before Robert's grandfather died. He made Robert promise to try once more to tell the history of humankind and Earth, as revealed by Bekti. This would be a great challenge, for while the story tells of the creation of humankind and clarifies its place in the universe, the story is both exciting and frightening. Morning Sky knew that the human species' nobility and pride would be injured. In Bekti's stories, the abduction phenomena and the attending gray beings are integral parts of humanity's history, explained against a framework of the star beings' purposes for mankind. And so here it gets into a tiny bit of it. In our galaxy are billions of star beings, Morning Sky said. Many races are descended from many life forms, reptiles, insects, dinosaurs, birds, and other life forms humankind cannot begin to imagine. Bekti had said that one of the oldest star races in this sector of the universe is the reptilian, Arion, which descended from dinosaur ancestors in the star system of Orion.
Like Arion?
Uh-huh. You notice that?
Oh, boy.
Ruled by queens, Bekti said, they created the most powerful empire in this galaxy. Arion warriors were unmatched for ferocity and bravery, and the Arion Empire was unmatched in power and size. Enemies became obedient servants of the reptilian queen's throne. In this way, the Arions eliminated resistance. Morningstar believes that millions of years of countless battles between various extraterrestrial races continue to this day. He details the evolution of humankind and Bekti's history of Earth on a number of websites, including canadastreetnews.com/terrapaper.
Is the idea the Aryan might be like sort of the Nordic looking, or are we talking about?
Well, it would seem that, okay, by given the name, but in this cosmology, it seems like they're the reptilians.
Oh, because I thought it said something about them working for the reptilians.
Yeah. Well, it's.
But they're still described as being reptilian.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reptilian Arion, which descended from dinosaur ancestors.
Yeah. Man, I want to descend from dinosaur ancestors. Okay, so. So what is the history behind Mount Shasta? I don't know that we talked much about Mount Shasta. I feel like we might have to do a whole episode on Shasta.
Absolutely episode worthy.
Okay.
Because that Shasta is it's epicenter tied into, of weirdness.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you think of just about any unusual or paranormal subject and you can tie it into something that's happened at Shasta. I mean, what I'm most familiar with is like Kiwani Lapsaritis's.
Lapsaritis.
Right?
Do you remember the
Lisp? Am I lisping?
The In Search of Bigfoot we watched before we went out
to
Washington.
Oh,
and there
yes.
was an interview with him at the end of it.
Yeah.
Henry May had uploaded.
Right.
Lapsaritis, for those unfamiliar, is a Sasquatch telepathic
devotee.
Sure. Guru.
Guru.
Who's
good.
In
yeah.
touch with the Sasquatch interdimensional tribes around the world.
Yeah, and so Shasta is...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, that one of his books, he details, you know, going to the region of Shasta, mm-hmm. having encounters, of course, with the Sasquatch, and watching UFOs sort of enter and exit the
yeah, mountain. UFOs are very tied into Shasta. I know there was an episode of UFO Hunters that's actually never been re-aired, and it's not part of... either of the first two seasons. There's a third season of UFO Hunters that got cut off. For some reason, I'm a big fan of UFO Hunters, the show. It's like my guilty play. I think it's also one of the best of those, like, people looking for things shows, you know, like Ghost Adventures type of shows, mostly because they delve so much into, like, the history. Like, I learned a lot mm-hmm. about the Portage Lakes UFO chase from UFO Hunters. But there's, like, an entire third season of that show that's never been released, and they... Bill Burns sort of puts it out there that it was never re-released because their information on Mount Shasta blew the door off of everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know, like, for example, the first wave of missing 411 and David Politis had cases where, you know, the rare cases where a child was taken and then came back and was able to talk about their experiences. Mount Shasta figured into one of those very prominently.
All right.
And some weird, weird stuff that the kid said happened.
So we'll have to do an episode on Mount Shasta. I think what we're going to do, we were going to do a Minerva Monster episode as episode 3. I think what we're going to do next is we're actually going to split off into reptilian stories, more like ground level, the kind of stuff you started with, because I've got some of those too.
Okay.
And then we'll do the lizard people / Loveland frog episode after that. So there's much more... for listeners, so stay tuned. Lizard Mania continues.
Lizard Mania.
On Monsteropolis next week.
Summer of the Lizard.
Summer of the Lizard. Oh, leave us a rating review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all that stuff. And don't forget to come see us at the Black Forge Coffee House on July 19th. It's a $5 show. It's cheap.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.